2 weeks ago, I was down in Kansas and had prepared a new message on laboring. And as I thought about what David asked me to speak on and what some of his objectives were and so on, I thought, I want to share with you some thoughts on laboring. Now, most of these will be directed toward laboring in the spiritual sense. And yet, there's a very practical application in your daily work situation. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight, laboring. We're going to talk about the basis for laboring. We'll talk about the barriers to laboring, and then how do you break through those barriers. Now, let me just kind of illustrate a couple of things here for you so that you understand why I even addressed the subject. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, when I spoke down in Wichita, some of you are familiar with the Kansas Ministries. And Jim Morris had asked me to come down and speak specifically to his disciples and disciple makers, the men who were really actively involved in the ministry of laboring. And, you know, I could have taken the traditional approach and preached the Great Commission and go make disciples and so on and so forth. But I thought, well, no, that's not what they really needed. And as I thought about tonight, I could take a different approach, but no, that's not what you need. I think what most of us need and what the men in Wichita needed was a little encouragement on how to keep on going. We're all committed to the fact of laboring, but how do you keep on going? How do you, how do you keep moving ahead? If you could think of spiritual growth in the same terms that we think of physical growth, you have infancy. You have a stage you could call childhood. You have teens. And you have adults. Okay? In infancy, whether it's physical or spiritual, there's a great deal of dependency. Child doesn't eat the proper food, mom and dad are going to make sure they get it. Spiritually, the child doesn't eat the proper food, mom and dad are supposed to, the spiritual father or parents are supposed to ensure that they get that. In childhood, we're having the development of convictions and philosophies. In other words, they're in a great learning curve in the childhood stage. And in here, we want them to test what they learned here. Now, whether that's physically or spiritually, the principle is the same. That what we want to do in childhood is we want to teach them principles by which to live. What we want to see them do in the teenage stage is apply those principles to their lives. And hopefully, that will lead us to this adult stage, which is basically characterized by reproduction. And labor. When you reach the adult stage, in case you haven't realized it, mom and dad are no longer going to work to earn your money. You're going to have to go to work, and you're going to have to labor, and hopefully you're going to reproduce your life, both physically and spiritually. And this is the area that I want to talk about tonight, because I think most of you are in various stages through here. But the bulk of you are in this area. Hey, I'm an adult. I've learned some principles by which to live. I've been trying to apply them to my life. Now, how can I continue to labor and be reproductive? Because let's face it, gang, it's not easy. We all get tired. We all get fed up. I mean, I go to so many Navigator conferences and hear the basics preached so many times. I sometimes want to go outside and just kind of throw up. I mean, I hear it all the time. What I need is a little encouragement on how in the world do I keep on going? And I need somebody to lift up my soul. So that's what we're going to talk about just here for a few minutes tonight. The basis for laboring. What is the basis for our labor?
Well, very simply, grace.
Grace is the basis for all labor, gang. Turn with me in your Bibles, and if you don't have one, please look on to somebody else's, to 1 Corinthians 15, verse 10. Stuart Briscoe, who's a pastor up in Milwaukee, a British pastor, preached this message, probably 4 or 5, maybe even 6 years ago to our staff. We invited him to a staff conference one time. And it absolutely is one of those messages, you know, with that just never left me. And so the introduction to my message tonight is basically his outline. Now, I'll use different illustrations and so on, but I can't do any better on outlining 1 Corinthians 15, 10 than what he did. So I'm going to steal his outline. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace toward me did not prove vain, but I labored more than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God with me. Now, 3 times grace is mentioned in this particular verse. And here's what he says about grace. He says, first of all, grace is a divine attitude. It's a divine attitude. By the grace of God, I am what I am. Now, you have to recognize and know the context of this particular passage to realize what he was saying. Because in verse 8, he says, And last of all, as it were to one untimely born, he appeared to me. And he talks about in the context here how he was the chief persecutor of the Christians. He says, he appeared to me as like one untimely born. What that word means in the Greek is that he viewed himself at that point as an abortion. An awful mess. Of no worth whatsoever. But he didn't stop there. But he recognized his past, and yet he knew his present and his future. By the grace of God, I am what I am. So, grace is a divine attitude. Secondly, grace is a dynamic stimulus. A dynamic stimulus. And his grace toward me did not prove vain, but I labored more than them all. Think about that. Grace was his primary motivation. The word grace has as one of its roots in the Greek, gratia. G-R-A-T-A, the same word that we get gratitude from. Now, what he's basically saying here is that labor is a legitimate response to grace. That in order to express my gratitude for God's grace, I labor. And Paul says, more than that, I labored more than them all. Not in prideful labor, but as an expression of his tremendous gratitude toward what God had done and the statement, I am what I am by the grace of God. So it's a legitimate response to grace. Then finally, grace is a daily enabling. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace did not prove vain, but I labored more than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God with me. The grace of God with me. Now, gang, we labor, and we can labor continuously because of the daily enabling of grace. This is God's answer to how do you keep on going? Well, you don't go in your own strength. You know why? Because you'll go beyond your own strength. You'll get tired. You'll get discouraged. You'll get living in sin and many other things if you try to do it in the flesh. And the only way that we can continue to labor is to appropriate his grace. How? Daily. Daily. I did a study a while back. I hadn't planned to say this tonight, but I did a study on the whole concept of grace. You know, what is it, so on and so forth. But the interesting thing that I was most interested in and trying to find out was how do you grow in grace? Because we're instructed to grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. And what practical things can we get a hold of to grow in grace? We know there were only two things that I could find the scriptures specifically speak to in how to grow in grace. Number one was to walk humbly before God and men. Because what does he do to the proud? He humbles them. What does he do to the humble? He gives grace. So, walk humbly before God and men. Secondly, come boldly before the throne of grace. Prayer. The devotional life. That whole concept. Now, gang, this is the basis for laboring. Grace. The divine attitude, the dynamic stimulus, and the daily enabling. All right. What about the barriers to laboring? Why don't we labor, both in the spiritual sense and in the physical sense? What are some of the barriers? Well, first of all, it's hard, sweaty, dirty work. Laboring is not a white-collar occupation. Laboring is hard, sweaty, dirty work. In Matthew 9:36, you know the little phrase in there that he says, we want you to pray for workers, laborers. The field is white unto harvest. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers, to send out workers. Again, in going back and studying the Greek connotation of the word labor, what it means, and I always used to think in this particular passage that it related, that it meant, you know, a pastor plus something, a laborer, a worker, there's the harvest field, must be a missionary plus something, must be someone who has theological training or biblical background of some kind, you know, somebody who's a cut above the others. That's not what the word means. The word in the Greek means a common field hand. Well, that's encouraging. Because I don't know about you, but I qualify, you know. So one of the barriers is that labor is just hard, dirty, sweaty work. I'm a Canadian, and we moved down to the States in 1966 for a year of training, and I guess we're slow learners because we've never gone back to Canada. But in the meantime, after we'd been here about 2 years, we figured that the navigators wanted us to remain in the U.S. We were trying to work out our immigration status. And being Canadians, we were here for 2 years just on a visitor's visa, which we renewed every 6 months. So we went back home to talk with the U.S. consulate and to make arrangements for immigrating into the U.S. on a permanent basis. And we couldn't get back in the country. We thought we could just go home, visit the U.S. consulate, put in the necessary paperwork, and while that paperwork was being processed, we would come back and continue to do what we were doing, which I was at that time responsible for the ministry at the University of Wisconsin. But once we filled out that paperwork, the guy told us, now you cannot enter the U.S. until we've ruled on this paperwork. I said, well, how long is that going to be? He said, oh, anywhere from 3 to 6 months. You know, typical government attitude, you know, there's no hurry on this particular thing. I said, well, that, you know, I'm sorry, I can't wait because the navigators have got me responsible for this work back there and I've got to leave. In fact, I'm leaving tomorrow. He said, well, I'm sorry, Mr. Sheffield. If you do, you'll be in the country illegally and you'll never get back in. So I realized that we were just going to have to wait. Well, what was I going to do for that 3 to 6 months? Well, I had a little bit of a debt, an old school debt that I hadn't paid off, and I thought, well, maybe God just wants me to go work and get this thing paid off. So I thought of all the different things I could do, and most of them were a rejection of any hard labor. But then I thought, no, the thing I could do is I can labor. I can work. And I come out of a background where my brothers are in the trades and in the construction industry, and I know what it is to labor. We used to do it every summer. And I thought, no, I'll go get my union card. In Canada, the unions are very strong. I'll go down and get my laborer's union card, and I'll go work as a laborer. Well, I'll tell you, I have never in all my life labored so hard. I got a job in a... it's a permanent, like the World Trade Exhibition, one of these big conference centers where they put on shows. They got about, you know, 15 different buildings, and they'll have a big motor show going on in one and a boat show going on in the other, hardware show. And one of the things we did was we put up the booths for these shows, and then we had to tear them down and put them up because of the next show coming in. Well, any of you that have ever worked in that kind of environment know that, boy, it is just hard work because you're working to deadlines all the time and you don't just delay, you know, the motor show which is coming in. And so many times I would work 16 hours. On some occasions we worked round the clock, 24 hours. Now, I didn't mind that because we got paid double time once we got into that that mode. But you talk about hard, dirty, sweaty work. When sometimes after 24 hours of working, I'd get in my car and I'd think, boy, some guy is rotten in this car. I mean, it was just plain hard work. Well, that's one of the barriers, isn't it? That's one of the things that we come up against, isn't it, in our own lives. How do we break through that? Just a willingness to work and to work hard. That's one of the barriers. Well, there's a second barrier to laboring, and that is that hard labor is not appreciated. Hard labor is not... How many times have you ever gone out and thanked your garbage man for picking up the garbage? How many times have you ever stopped to thank some old farmer slugging it out in that field? Or some guy digging a hole? I mean, labor, hard, dirty, sweaty labor is just not appreciated. In the 3 months that I worked for this particular firm, laboring up there in Canada during that period of time, I cannot recall one time that my boss ever came by and said, hey, you did a great job. And boy, I busted my guts trying to earn, you know, his appreciation. And to do the job the best I could. You know all he was concerned about? Do you think you could do it faster? That's all he was concerned about. Because the faster we got the job done and he could let us go, the quicker the time card stopped. And then all of that money, he was on a show rate to set it up. So whatever was left, he shared in a bonus on that. So he could care less, you know, about appreciating your labor. He just wanted the job done. And boy, if you didn't work, you never got any overtime. That was his little bait, the little carrot. You could work your 8 hours, and if you sloughed off, you never got asked to work any overtime. He figured out how to motivate people. A third barrier is that labor, hard, dirty, sweaty labor, is contrary to society and the world system. Because what does our society teach us? Take it easy. Leisure, pleasure. I mean, you just turn the TV on and, you know, there's the gal on the beach in Waikiki, or stop and have a Budweiser, or, you know, whatever. And everything that we do in terms of hard work and labor is really contrary to the world system. I worked the first day that I arrived on this job up in Canada. It was really a kick. I had determined that I was really going to work. And I kind of had in the back of my mind that I would outwork any guy on the crew that I was appointed to. So the first day they hooked me up with these two old boys, and we went down to this building, and a show had just departed, and our job was to tear down all the partitions, stack them, you know, get all the gear ready for the next show coming in and so on. So the foreman took us down there in a little truck, gave us all the equipment we needed, said go to it, and he just pulled around the corner, and we worked, the three of us, for about 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden, these two guys just go over and they sit down. I thought, ooh, first test. What do I do? Do I covet my relationship with them? Or do I perform as I know I ought to as a Christian? And I was really, you know, just for a moment, I really hesitated. Because I would have liked to have gone and sat down and had a cup of coffee too. But I thought, no. So I just kept on working. Well, they're sitting there watching me, and about 15 or 20 minutes later, after they're, you know, kind of watching, finally one of them said, hey, come over here and sit down. I said, well, what for? I said, you know, it's only 9:30. It's not 10:30. We don't take a coffee break, but 10:30. He said, come over here and sit down. The boss isn't here. There's nobody to impress. I said, well, you have a different standard than I do. Because I serve a higher principle. And I said, look, it doesn't bother me at all if you guys sit there for the whole day. You do what you think is right. But I have to do what I think is right, and I'm going to work. And at 10:30, I'll come sit down with you, and we'll have a cup of coffee together, and we'll talk and be friends. But at 10:45, I'm going back on the job, and I'm going to work. You know, the next day, showed up for work, punched in my time clock, went down, thought we'd be working on the same thing because we hadn't finished. It was a two or three day job. Those two guys had gotten the foreman, and the foreman came and he said, I don't know what you did yesterday. He said, but those two guys won't work with you. So I just kind of, I laughed and I thought about it. But see, that's the world system, isn't it? See, that's the standard of the world, guys, is to get by with as minimal as you can and get paid for it. Did I hear it right that the U.S. postal workers, that one of the things that they were after and they were thinking about striking was the fact that they wanted a permanent life contract? Yeah, the Canadians are after the same, the Canadian postal system after the same thing. Basically, what they want is tenure. They, you know, you can't fire them for anything. Boy, that's the world system, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. Another barrier to laboring is that the laborers are few and the work is lonely. See, even in a group like this of committed men, there are some that are a little bit more committed than the others. And to do the job over and above everybody else is lonely work, because you've got to set a pace and you don't get a whole lot of encouragement in it. Now, when you think of laboring in a spiritual sense, why should we think that laboring was going to be easy? Jesus Christ never said
that labor would be easy. There's nowhere in the Scriptures that you will find that life is going to be good to you, that life is going to be just to you. Now, Jesus is, and God is, but not life itself. Life is hard, gang. And Jesus never conned us into thinking that the Christian experience was going to be pie in the sky and joy and peace and all bubbly all the time. Now, true, we do get that inner peace and that inner joy from our relationship with Jesus Christ. But life is hard and unjust. And don't ever forget it. Don't ever forget it around the navigators. Don't think that the navigators are a perfect organization which will always treat you perfectly and justly. It's an impossibility because the navigators is comprised of people. Okay? And people make mistakes. And people blow it. And people hurt one another, whether they're Christian people or not. And you think of the Apostle Paul. Do you think the Apostle Paul found that laboring was all fun and peaches and cream? Man, all you got to do is read the epistles and find out that he was run out of town most places that he labored. You talk about not being appreciated. It's one thing not to be appreciated. It's another thing to be persecuted. So we don't find that example in the Scriptures. It's not a true biblical perspective of labor. How do we break the barriers? Talked about the basis for laboring, the barriers to laboring. Well, let me give you some ideas on how to break some of these barriers. When your attitude is dragging a little and you're down at the mouth and you think that life is unjust, and it is, and it's hard, and it is, remember your devotional life. Gang, the one key, if not the primary key, to breaking through the barriers, to continue for you to have a life of continuous, fruitful, productive labor, is a strong devotional life. You cut the corners in your devotional life, and you cut your resources to be able to labor. The devotional life is nourishment to your life of labor. Now, you starve yourself or you cheat in your diet and your intake, and you will not be able to labor as effectively as what God wants you to labor. 2 years ago, we were living in Chicago, and I met a young businessman. He really impressed me. The guy had started his own company. He was the president of his own company. He was about 31 at that time, a couple years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. He's about 33 now. Started his own company, was doing fairly well. Fairly new Christian, I think about 3 years old in the Lord. Sharp wife, young family. Kind of an up-and-comer in the local evangelical church where we were attending. And I had met this guy, and he impressed me. You know, one of the things is I like to invest my life in people that are moving ahead, that are trying to do something. Even if it's wrong, I still would rather invest my life in somebody who's at least moving in some direction. Well, this guy was one of those men, so I thought, well, I'm going to get to know him. So I introduced myself, got to know him a little bit, and then went down and had lunch with him several times over the course of the next 2 or 3 months. Finally, I had whet his appetite enough. You know, you just learn how to talk enough about the spiritual life and so on just to get a guy's real attention. And there's no hurry to do that. You know, if you really want to minister to men and you have the long haul in view, you don't need to dump the truck on them all the first night. And so I had determined, well, I'm just going to bait him a little and see whether his interest will really begin to generate. And sure enough, it did. And finally, he told me, he said, now look, Sheffield, I want to get down to business. I want you to teach me everything you know about making disciples. Well, man, that's like, you know, raw meat to a lion for a navigator. You know, that just got my old juices churning. And so we sat down for this particular lunch, and I began to outline, I have a grandiose plan, and how you make disciples, and the whole process of growth, and what you need to put in, and so on and so forth, and how you go about some of this. Well, we must have spent an hour and a half, you know. I thought I did a superb job on it. And as we were getting up to leave, it was like the Lord hit me right between the eyes. And I said, well, wait a minute, Bill, you better sit down for a minute. Let me ask you something. Do you have a devotional life that is consistent and victorious? Well, it was like I took a 2x4 and smashed him on the side of his head. He said, well, man, I don't even know what you mean, let alone consistent or victorious. I said, well, Bill, how are you doing in developing in your relationship with the Lord? He says, man, I don't know. I don't know how to do that. Well, I realized, see, here I was giving him this grandiose plan. And sure, he was the kind of guy that probably could have gone out and for 3, 6 months or a year could have implemented some of those things. But he eventually would have crashed. So I backed him all the way up. Showed him how to have a quiet time, began to check up on him on a daily basis, and we began to meet regularly, got him into a Bible study, and he began to grow. Well, we moved out here a year ago in a few months. He moved to Salt Lake City. So this summer, we made a little vacation and ministry trip out of driving over to Salt Lake to visit with my old buddy again. We had a little bit of time there, and again, the same thing. Man, he was just, you know, so gung-ho to have ministry. And we talked a little bit, but we didn't get the in-depth time that I really wanted with him. You know, we were running around, visiting the temple and all that stuff. About a month ago, he called me. He said, hey, I'm up in Denver. How about coming up and having lunch? So I said, fine, I'll bring Nancy, and we can get some time together. In fact, I was leaving on a trip, so it worked out beautifully that afternoon. We just drove up, had lunch with him, and she took me to the airport in Denver. Well, we sat down, ordered our dinner, or our lunch, and he said, now, you've got to help me, because here's the problem I'm having getting these guys. I said, well, Bill, let me ask you one more question before we get into that. How are you doing in your devotional life? And boy, he just hung his head. He said, I knew you were going to ask that. He said, I'm not doing well. And I said, well, Bill, let's just eat our dinner. And the next time we come together, I'll ask you the same question. So you can be prepared for it. Because I'm not going to talk to you about making disciples when you can't, you know, get consistent in your devotional life. See, gang, that's a principle, isn't it? And we forget it sometimes. And we navigators of all people need to be reminded. You know, when I made my comment about going to navigator conferences on the basics, I really didn't mean it all that much. Because the facts are, I do need to go to those conferences. You know why? I need the same reminders that this little infant needs back here, and this child, and this teenager, and this adult. The basics in the Christian life are basic, and one of those basics is a strong devotional life if we're going to continue to labor. Now, there's a second thing to breaking through the barriers. It's rather obvious. But that is a commitment to work or to labor. A basic, decisive act of my will. I am going to be a worker, a laborer. And I will do it to the best of my ability. It was fun on that job back in Canada. The only guy, finally they paired me up with him. And he was an Italian immigrant. Big John was his name. And man, he was big. Take Jack Hesbelt, add about, 3 to 4 inches and 50 to 75 pounds. And boy, that old boy, and he used to love it because he was the only guy who could outwork me. We had these, they were sheets of plywood, 3/4 inch plywood. They were 4 foot wide, 10 foot long.
They used them for these special displays. But every time the show went in, they'd repaint them. So they must have had, you know, I don't know, 20 coats of paint on those things. Well, boy. And see, and then you're lifting them. They're one on top of the other to make these booths. So you're lifting that baby out of a rail and down. And that old John, he used to just love to watch me struggle on the end of that thing. And he'd just flip that up, you know. And then we'd get going fast. See, we'd go down these. I mean, it might be a half a mile of these booths, and we'd be taking the tops off of things. And old John, he just loved to see if he could wear me out before coffee break and so on. If I hadn't had a basic commitment to labor, I would never have hung in. If my attitude had been, hey, I'm just here to make as much money as I can with the least effort, I never would have made it. Well, that's true in the spiritual life, gang. And you can have that attitude. That, hey, I'm here in the spiritual life just to make it on the bare minimum. And that, I suppose, is your right. God made you as an independent creature with the right to make those decisions. Now, it's the wrong decision, but it is your. It's your right to go ahead and make it. A commitment to work. What Christ is looking for is committed soldiers, not fair weather friends. And that's really important, gang. When the going gets tough, you've heard the little adage, the tough get going. Third thing to breaking the barriers fits in with this commitment to work, and that is just the basic concept of dying to self. Am I willing to die to self to serve others? See, when I came out here to take this job in here, I left what I felt was one of the most fantastic jobs in the entire Navigators. I mean, to be a regional director, to be involved with the staff that I was involved in, to be involved with what God was doing back there in the Midwest was the greatest joy of my life. And I had to come to that place. Was I willing to come out and bury myself in order to serve? To serve Jack. To labor for him and with him and to lift him up. And it basically came down to John 12:24, dying to self. Am I willing to die to self? And lay down that which was very visible with the Navigators. Got lots of appreciation when I was a regional director out there, particularly from the Midwest. A lot of appreciation because we had a flow of men and money going overseas and so on. And all of the Navigator leadership knew it. And now I come out here, and all I get is, good night. I got one today in my office. How come the road has got all that sand on it up there by the entrance? Well, I wanted to say, you dummy, it's so the trucks won't go sliding down and crash into things. You know? That's all I get. What's wrong with the Glen? What's wrong with Nav Press? My bill's all fouled up and so on. You know. A basic willingness to die to... Yeah, I can use these illustrations, gang, because they fit. I can't believe some of the stuff I get. A basic willingness to die to self. I think there's another aspect to breaking the barriers, a fourth thing, and that is involvement with a team of men or a group of men of like-hearted mind and commitment. See, the thing that keeps me going is that I have a relationship with these like-hearted men out here. I have a relationship with Rod Sargent and Jerry Bridges and Jack, and we operate as a team. And it is amazing. The four of us here at headquarters, one of us is always down, and the other three are always up. And that's the whole purpose of working together in a group. See, somebody's always going to be hurting. Somebody's always going to be down. And it sure is nice to have like-hearted men who understand your situation
and it can give you a little bit of encouragement. One of the greatest guys, it's an encouragement to me, and he was an encouragement when I was on this direct team of regional directors, but the guy who's my greatest encouragement right now is Bob Lewis. And I don't know whether you all know Bob, but old Bob, every time we have a meeting now, he has a feel and a sense for what I'm involved in, the struggles I'm involved in over here, and how I would much rather be back over here. And boy, he just ministers to my old heart every time he comes out. Now, I think part of it is that I've told him that he's the next guy to come out here. So he wants to make sure I stay encouraged for a long time. There's another aspect to breaking through the barriers, and that is to remember that 1 Corinthians 15:58 is true. That no labor in the Lord is in vain. The word vain there means not without profit. In other words, whatever you do, laboring in Christ, laboring for Christ, eventually will bring forth the fruit that God intends for it. All labor, the labor you do up on that roof, will bring forth fruit. It is not in vain. Now, it might not bring forth fruit in terms of converts, but it's going to bring forth fruit in your own life, isn't it? If you do it with the right attitude. And if you do it as unto the Lord. So no labor is in vain. No labor is without some profit. The problem is that we usually measure things in terms of profit in the Christian ministry in terms of people coming to Christ or being built up in the faith. We fail to see that the profit might be to us in the way that we do the job and what God works in and through us. And that's as important, if not more important to God, than your ministry or your outreach. So no labor is without profit. And finally, keep a pretty good perspective, gang, on the brevity of life. Now, most of you don't need to worry about that too much. There are a couple of us here in this room that are in the latter stages, or at least on the fast.
Speak for yourself.
Well, I wasn't speaking to you. Don't take it personally. But isn't it true, gang? The brevity of life. You know, James 4, 13 and 14. James describes life like these cool mornings. You go out and you go. And there's a vapor for a moment. And then it's gone. Now he says that's what life is all about. That's the brevity of life. Don't ever get it in your mind that it's going to go on and on and on and on forever and ever here on earth. You will only have so long to labor. And you don't know and I don't know when the Lord will take us home. Now I'd hate to go home and I have to stand before the Lord and tell him, well, you know, it was my intention that once I retired from the Navigators, I was going to go to work. I was going to labor sometime down the road. Or I was sloppy in my labor habits and the things that God wanted me to do. The brevity of life. If you want to do a couple of little, just maybe tomorrow morning in your quiet time, James 4, 13 and 14, Psalm 90, in fact, the whole psalm. Read it with an idea toward the brevity of life. That's what the psalmist is talking about. Teach me how to labor and how to view life. Okay? So you have the basis for labor is grace. You have the barriers to laboring, it's hard, dirty, sweaty, unappreciated work, contrary to society, and not many are involved. And how do you break the barriers? Strong devotional life, a commitment to work, dying to self, surround yourself with men of like heart, remember that your labor is not in vain, and that you're not going to be able to labor forever. Well, let's have a word of prayer, and we'll quit right there.